Hello, everybody. Welcome to News for the Soul. This is Daniel Brinkley.
This is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
Okay, everybody, take a deep breath. We know that we choose to come to this world, and we're chosen to come to this world, and we've come for breath. We breathe in for ourselves and out for spiritual unfoldment. And as we breathe these moments, let's open up our heart and open up our souls, and let the true awareness of News for the Soul make its impact now and forever.
Good evening and welcome to News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained. I'm Nicole Whitney, and today Peter Sage is back. PeterSage.com is where you find him online, and we've been talking to him about all kinds of interesting space projects and such that he's been involved in. Basically, the bottom line of it has been manifesting your goals, manifesting anything. Tonight, I want to talk to him about real-world results with a real big problem I've been having. And kind of walk through the manifestation steps. Lighten Up literally is the show I'm talking about, the series that we've got going on right now. And, oh, Lord, do I ever need help. So let's bring him on and talk about lightening up or creating the results that you want in the real world today, right now, by changing your focus. Peter Sage, welcome to News for the Soul.
Hey, Nicole. It's great to be back.
It's really, really great to have you back. And I really need to talk to you today, I'll tell you. It's been fun. We've been having some interesting conversations about doing some manifesting some results, some specific results, and I have been getting nowhere. So I thought, okay, the guy I need to talk to is Peter Sage. So you have done a lot of specific kind of goals over the years, not just in business, but with personal achievements. Can you list a couple of those? So they get an idea of what you've done. I'm thinking specifically in the realm of physical achievements and personal stuff.
Sure, and a lot of it does tie together. I'm a great believer in personal growth, and not sort of personal growth around the midsection, but certainly personal growth in terms of what is it that I can do to become more of who I am, and as a result, what can I accomplished that is beyond my current sense of self, what is beyond my current sense of my boundaries. And from a physical side, that's taken the shape of doing some pretty crazy things. I ran my first marathon probably, I think it was in 99, and not too long ago. But up to that point, I'd always fairly kept in shape, but the thought of running a marathon was like, wow, I mean, that was the ultimate. So I didn't really know how to train, but I'm a great believer in desire comes first and everything else shows up. So as a result of setting that goal, I started studying people that had a history of being able to teach people that weren't specifically runners how to complete marathons in the shortest possible time. And it's easy to go out and find the answers. One of my core beliefs is that all the answers are out there. So if you look at being able to do anything, whether it's physically challenging, whether it's a weight issue, whether it's a business goal, whether it's getting over a particular problem, I have no doubt in my mind that there's not somebody out there already that's already done that you can learn from. So that was my sort of starting philosophy. And I just went out and applied the same principles. As a result, I went and ran my first marathon. I would never, ever do that again. And then a few years later, in 2003, I was sitting around just between the seven-day period between Christmas and New Year's, which is when I tend to set my goals for the following year. And I thought, what is it this year that I could do physically to raise the bar? And this little voice went off in my head that says, why don't you run the Marathon Day Saab? I quickly told the voice to shut up, so my first thought. But once you start that little fire and light that little spark and it starts to grow, you can't ignore it. And for those of the listeners that are a little curious right now as to what the Marathon Day Saab is, it's a marathon a day back-to-back for 7 days across the Sahara Desert. With day four being a double marathon of 84 kilometers, 52 miles. And so that became the goal.
Oh, my God. Why would you want to volunteer for something like that, honestly?
Great question, and one I've been asked quite a lot, as I'm sure you can imagine. There's several reasons. I mean, we talk about personal development. We talk about what's possible. We talk about living your dreams. Occasionally, you just got to go out and do it. And picking the toughest foot race in the world for someone who had only ever just ran a marathon seemed like it was a good enough example of how to be able to walk my talk in the real world. The other reason was the fact that, by contrast, if I could go and complete this, then as a reference, every other challenge that comes up in my life would seem smaller by contrast. It's great to be able to go and do something like this so that, next time interest rates go up, or next time, my boss shouts at me, or next time, I have an argument with my spouse, or whatever it is, if I can go and run across the desert, I can handle this. It's a great contrast frame that you take with you for the rest of your life. So that was another great reason. And also, I travel around, I do public speaking, and if I can help inspire somebody, even if it's to go and run a 5K race because of what I did out in the desert as a contrast to them, then, if I can use that and make the inspiration not just serve myself but serve others, then that's also a phenomenal reason to be able to step up and make something like that happen.
So when you were having this thought come into your mind, how much of a stretch was it from where you were at physically at that point in your life?
A big one. I'd only ever ran a marathon sort of before, let alone seven of them across the desert. And that's carrying 20 kilos on your back with all of your equipment. Water is rationed to 9 liters a day. That's for washing, cooking, hydrating, anything you want to use it for. Once it's gone, it's gone. It was more of a strategy game than a physical game on top. And so with my traveling lifestyle at the time, I was doing 20 countries a year with business and speaking. It was extremely difficult to train. So I had the added complication of being able to do that. Plus, when I set the goal, it was winter, and whenever I was in one place long enough in my back in England to train for that, it was always hard to train outside because of the icy conditions. And if you slip and twist an ankle, then it puts you out for 3 weeks. You can't afford to let that happen. So luckily at the time, I did own a chain of health clubs across the UK, and so I used to go into the gym. And one strategy I thought of was putting a load of sand in the sauna and running on the spot, but the rest of the board didn't really think that was a good idea. And so I used to run on the treadmill uphill, carrying a pack full of weights, dressed in as many woolly fleeces as that I could just to simulate the heat. And I got some pretty funny looks, but the training itself was very underprepared or inadequate for something of that caliber. And that's really where, when you get there, you're standing at the start line in the Sahara, you understand that it's not just about the physical side. Physically, we are capable of so much more than we give ourselves credit for. And mentally, the mental aspect is the key to being able to unlock that. And that's what I found. Yeah, I was not the fittest person on that field by any stretch. Some people have been training for years for this race. But I knew how to be able to manage my state effectively enough, or at least for most of the race, and that was really taught me again another valuable lesson for whenever I'm in a spot. It's not about what I do with my arms and legs as much as my mind.
Well, this is why we're talking to you today, and this is why we're doing what we're doing in the form of consciousness experiment with respect to changing state of weight, right? Because it's, you know, I could just go on a diet. Anybody can do that. But it seems to be very connected to what's going on in one's mind.
Sure.
And just to give you an example of what's happened so far, 1 year ago, almost to the day, I had done this myself, a consciousness experiment, 30 days, where just by changing my thinking to where I was already in a state where it was already done, I lost nearly 50 pounds in like a month. I mean, without barely changing anything.
Yep.
And I continued eating the same way and exercising just as much, if not more, throughout the year and losing almost nothing more. Well, I've now put it back on and have gotten myself in the reverse creation state where I'm creating the opposite of what I want, just because I'm focused in the wrong direction here. And so I know I've had the direct experience of having each thing have a, you know, each focus have a completely different physical result while you're still doing the same things physically. So, you know, going from a place of going, well, I think I'll just go run that marathon or seven marathons, as it were, to actually taking the action to where it actually manifested. Like, I mean, you're saying most of that is what's going on in the mind is determining how your success is going to be.
Yes, and I'm not negating the fact that, you know, you still have to train for something like, you know, at that level. However, if we put it into a context specifically about weight, and, you know, it's very, very clear in terms of what is happening in my experience with most people. And we know, as I'm sure most of your listeners do, listening to you over the years, Nicole, that everything starts with a thought. And you know, everything is energy. Everything starts with a thought. So when we are discussing our self-image, which is an area that I've seen so many people just destroy themselves, when we start with weight issues and health issues, what we're looking at when we look in the mirror is not the result so much as to what we've done. It is completely the result of how we've thought. And, you know, you can always diet, you can always exercise, and what then you're trying to do is change the physical symptoms, but without changing the underlying focus as to what got you those physical symptoms in the first place, you will always be pulled back like a magnet. And that's where people, you know, this whole yo-yo of dieting, of on and off and on and off, persists throughout most people's lives. And it's not because that, you know, one diet works or one diet doesn't, or, you know, I found the new weight loss phenomena. It's all about correcting the underlying patterns of thinking as it relates to self-image, which from that point on, you'll never need to diet should that be put in place.
Well, that's where we need to go and fast. So clarify what you mean by that, the underlying patterns of thinking.
Most people, as it results to self-image, are very much anchored unconsciously to the two primary fears that every human has. And that is the fear of not being good enough, and therefore we won't be loved. And so to what degree those unconscious fears control us and to the degree that we resist anything that comes close to those fears generally dictates the, you know, the self-image whenever we look in the mirror. That's why you can have the people who, most people would think look absolutely amazing and would, you know, would swap their bodies in a heartbeat. And when those people actually look in the mirror and see themselves, they see something completely different to what the other people envy. They see, you know, the tiniest little flaw that becomes, you know, the biggest thing in their mind. Because not because that they're, you know, they're not working hard, but because they're still resisting where they are at. In my experience, Nicole, most people who have a weight challenge are very they're resisting where they're at. They don't like being fat, so they resist it. And as a result, we all know that which we resist persists. That which you focus on expands. Now, the brain doesn't accept negation.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I'm at the point where I'd be terrified to even think about dieting again because it's just you know, until I started dieting, it wasn't an issue. Now it's just, as you say, expanding.
If, in my experience, if someone was absolutely happy being fat, they could choose to be thin.
Okay, so how does one really truly, I mean, go through the, you know, the mind games and say, I accept myself, I love myself, I'm worthy, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you're uncomfortable, it hurts, it's very, it doesn't feel good. And you're constantly physically drawn into not feeling good.
Yeah.
Not being able to, you know, you're putting on your shoes as an Olympic event. It sucks. So how do you get to truly into acceptance and, you know, from that place, in that place?
Well, for a start, affirmations over the top of unresolved self-images or self-issues will never work. So you could stare at yourself in the mirror and say, I love myself, I love myself, I love myself, you know, until you run out of oxygen. And yeah, it's unless the underlying reason as to why you aren't happy where you're at is addressed, then it's never going to have the level of emotional impact that's required to change your sense of identity. Usually what you'll find is that there are one or two significant emotional events that are responsible for how somebody formulates the majority of their self-image. A lot, in my experience, has to do with parents and expectations of parents. You know, I was never good enough for daddy. You know, I was never good enough to be loved, or whatever the interpretation of that behavior was. And as a result, most people who grew up and lived their entire life looking through that lens of not good enough, and no matter what they will ever do, no matter what it says on the scales, no matter how many awards on the wall, they will never conquer that issue, because the issue is themselves having to be good enough without any external validation, not trying to chase some mythical external validation in order to feel good enough, if that makes sense.
So how does one determine what they've got going on inside them with that?
A lot of that is reflection. Now, sometimes it's good to be able to get somebody, whether it's preferably trained, either a counselor or somebody that is used to working with you know, unconscious issues of self-worth and self-image. A lot of the time people will actually turn around and say, well, yeah, I can remember the time. I remember the actual experience. A good example, just to take it out of a weight context, for example, is singing. Most people are pretty much afraid to sing in public. And a lot of the excuse given is, you know, my voice isn't good enough, or, you know, I can't sing, I'm tone deaf. And that's like saying that a dog can't bark. You know, we were born with a voice. We were born to be able to sing. And if you ask somebody the actual time or date, or say, ask them the question, when did you stop singing? On a high majority of cases, they'll actually be able to tell you, after pondering, that it was following one specific comment from one specific person on one specific day. And it, you know, it could have been just a throwaway, oh my God, don't give up your day job. It could have been where somebody put their fingers in their ear and grimaced as a joke, but you know, we were in such a sense of need for approval that was it. We, you know, we're never going to sing again and live our whole lives justifying that. So it's, if you transfer that back into a weight context or health, a lot of people could probably, if they sat down and thought about it and relaxed their mind out of the way for long enough, they could probably say, well, okay, what is it that I'm resisting here? What, you know, by being where I am right now, what do I feel? What am I resisting in my life? Or what awareness am I'm not allowed to, am I resisting coming through? What am I blocking? Who was I not good enough for other than myself? You know, what is it that I'm trying to get? Whose approval do I need here? And start asking questions like that.
And I think, as you say, even like with the singing analogy, even with the weight analogy, if they have it in there, I mean, you probably know. I mean, for me, I could intellectualize the whole thing and pontificate on it for hours and go, well, this and that and this and that and this and that. But then what do you do with that?
One of the keys that I found that's extremely helpful is to use the law of conformity to your advantage. And what I mean by that is that, you know, whether we like it or whether we don't, we are creatures of conformity, and we conform to our environment 95% of the time. if you are constantly surrounding yourself with the awareness of people or the expectations of people that do not value themselves, we will get sucked into that pattern. And unfortunately, what is the prevalent mindset or the prevalent influence of mindset in today is the media. Yeah, you cannot turn on a television, open a newspaper, or read a magazine without feeling some sort of sense of self-consciousness about why you're not measuring up. And we forget to realize that the entire media industry is run on advertising revenue. And the only way that most people or companies can get them to sell their products is by creating a need. And by definition of creating a need, it means that where you are right now isn't good enough. So this entire mass awareness or mass consciousness of the media is constantly 24/7, if you buy into it or read it, telling you at a conscious and unconscious level that you're not good enough, you need to change, you have to buy this, you have to change, this is wrong about you, or you, if you don't have this, then you don't measure up, whatever it is. And that is so prevalent. That's why I don't read newspapers and I don't watch the television. And certainly from a news perspective, and for those people that haven't figured it out yet, I feel it's all the same news. It just keeps happening to different people.
And if it's something you really need to hear about, you'll hear about it.
Absolutely, 100%. I have not watched a news bulletin from start to finish on something like CNN since my mid-20s. I've never read a newspaper from cover to cover from since same time, my mid-20s, where I took a vow that I'm not going to buy into this media culture that's where my unconscious is being programmed through 30,000 messages a day through advertising as to what somebody else through their agendas wants me to think about, with the sole underlying outcome being that at some level I'm not good enough.
Wow. That makes you think, doesn't it?
And so if somebody can actually identify that level of experience where that significant emotional event happened that triggered the primary fear that they then manifested into a pattern of weight issues or health or being driven by the good opinion of others. One of the first things I would do is to check your peer group. Check who you're spending time with. Are the people who you hang around with right now supportive of you the way you are, or do they like the fact that you're not as good because it makes them feel better?
What if your peer group checks out okay?
Then enroll them. Yeah, ask them to support you in the fact that you're okay where you're at. In terms of if you are currently overweight, celebrate it. Right, be okay with it. If it's something you start to resist, then you will be in that cycle of push pull for forever. The second that you can totally accept and appreciate every ounce of who you are, literally, right, that will be the point where you have enough emotional freedom to be able to choose a new path without having to try and resist what it is that you're letting go of.
So is it really, is it really that simple? Is it the fact that we're moving away from something we hate as opposed to moving toward something in our power of choosing?
Yes, although the simple side there is how you explained it. The more difficult side is that a lot of the time our unconscious is what's making those decisions. And our unconscious is being driven by where our self-image is, and our unconscious is being driven by the influence of our environment and the conformity aspects to it and the significant emotional events that have happened in our past. If we can get to a point where we can literally just celebrate and be okay and what the hell? This is who I am, right? I mean, the other thing to remember is that a lot of the great spiritual teachers came from a place that they knew they weren't their body. Jesus didn't see himself as his body. Muhammad didn't see himself as his body. Mother Teresa didn't see herself as her body. One of the famous presidents in the U.S., John Quincy Adams, near the end of his death, he wrote a letter, I believe, to Thomas Jefferson that said, John Quincy Adams is doing fine. In fact, John Quincy Adams is great. However, the house that he lives in is falling apart. John Quincy Adams will be leaving it soon. What a powerful insight.
Well, I just want to remodel, that's all. I don't want to move out. So, you know, this is the thing, too, is that, you know, it's one thing to talk about, another thing to get, which is why I think the universe has decided I'm going to go through this experience this year. So I can really articulate it and really get it and maybe help other people that, out there that are stuck. And this, of course, can be used not just with weight issues, but any kind of goal where, you know, we always have these blind spots where you can't see it. And I know if this was any other issue, the way I've been kind of focusing on it, I would be slapping myself across the head, like, stop it, you know. But I can't seem to see in this one instance what I'm doing to lock into the struggle. So, because I can intellectualize, I'm, you know, every ounce of me is fabulous and fantastic, and this is not my body's not who I am. Although, you know, I haven't always been big either, so I have trouble with going, well, this is me. Well, no, it's not. You know?
Yeah.
But intellectualizing it, saying it, and really feeling it to the point where you're, like you say, releasing the issue or the struggle, how do you get there?
And that's why I said it's really helpful sometimes to have somebody who is, who does have experience in working with issues like that to be able to guide you through, whether it's hypnotherapy, NLP, timeline, you know, all of the different disciplines that we know about that can be very useful in that. They're just different ways of getting to the same point. It's everything also, again, as it's tied totally to a sense of identity, we have to start there. You know, who do I see myself as? What am I willing to settle for? Where am I? How do I value myself? What meaning do I give the place that I'm in right now? Check in with myself. It's too easy to get distracted in today's multimedia world to not even sit down and spend an hour of our time thinking about us. And we want the quick fix. We want, well, you know, just tell me what to do. Give me the ABC so I can schedule it into my day timer and then I'll handle it. Well, the unconscious mind and our sense of spiritual self doesn't work to that timetable. And maybe part of the lesson is to get you off of that constant hamster wheel to a place where you can take stock and say, you know, it's time I got back in touch with myself. Rather than got back in touch with, you know, trying to make this a goal because, you know, the underlying reason I want to look thin is to be able to gain approval or love or acceptance or feel good enough or, you know, fill in the blank.
I think that's why it's such a disconcerting thing for those that are going through it, because you just feel, you know, it makes you feel very disconnected in some, you know, imbalanced way. I mean, it doesn't feel healthy. Now, when you set your goal for the marathon, because you didn't have the programming going on, was it very just kind of methodical, oh, we'll do this step and I'll do this step and I will visualize? I mean, was it kind of a linear, methodical process?
There was a sense of excitement with it. It was, I framed the whole thing into a sense of adventure. I mean, wow, what an opportunity. What a way to be able to go and experience, you know, a place on Earth that is just, you know, awesome to look at. And, you know, from a your typical logistical, you know, point of view, obviously there's certain things you have to take care of. You have to have a certain level of fitness. And, you know, at that point I started sitting down and visualizing, and I recorded myself, and I got a friend of mine who actually ran the marathon before, a gentleman called David Becker, an awesome inspiration. He came up and he sat down and he recorded with me this, what we call our program, whereby he just put onto MP3 this whole visualization of routine. So when I was out training, I could see the finish line, I could feel the sun, I could feel the dunes under my feet, I could see the view from the top of the dunes, I could, you know, and this whole sort of build up and crescendo over a sort of 15-20 minute period. So as I was running, I was celebrating, and it was incredibly powerful. Now, I'd finished the race 100 times before I started it.
So what about how was your believability factor as you were doing this, from the moment that you first conceived the idea of, you know, geez, I'll actually do this, to actually going through the training and then actually completing the race? Like, what was your believability level at?
You're always going to have doubts, and doubts are integral and just part of human behavior and experience. So, you know, everyone out there saying, oh, well, you know, it's all right for you if you didn't believe that you know, if you believed 100%, there's no doubts, I doubt. I doubt too. Yeah, there's always going to have that, whether you're in business, whether you're in a relationship. Doubts are part of being human, but they serve, rather than to serve to compound your sense of helplessness, you can use them to keep you on track by reframing it. Doubts are healthy. Doubts are just a check to make sure that, you know, what I'm doing right now, am I moving forward towards or away from my goal? Yeah, is what I'm doing serving me at a level of my higher self? And if it is, then thank you. Yeah, I'm back on track. You know, what is it that I want to choose to focus on right now? Well, me crossing the finish line will do. I get excited about that. I get emotionally connected, fully associated to that side, and I anchor it in. And I'll tell you a story about what happened in the desert, because as I started to run day one, day two was actually Dune Day, the tallest sand dunes in North Africa, and it was just incredible. Some of these were 20 stories high, and we ran a marathon over these, and it was just awesome, absolutely awesome. But at that point, I'm pulling, you know, most of the mental tricks out of my bag that I can. You know, I'm visualizing my backpack filled with helium. I'm visualizing that the sun, you know, the hotter it is, the more energy it gives me. I'm trying to pull every little mental trick that I can out of my ears here. And then it was on the day before the double marathon, on the end of day three, I tried to save some water by not hydrating my food as much. And bearing in mind, at this point, you're burning 10,000 calories a day and putting in two. If you're carrying all your own food for the whole race too. And I mean, if you want to, you know, anybody wants a lose weight quick plan, then yeah, you could always go and run this race. Cause I think I lost 30 pounds in 7 days.
Oh, there you go. I'm in. I just have to do it 3 times and I'm done.
A little extreme, and I probably wouldn't recommend it. But that was a byproduct. But what happened was, I woke up on the morning of the double marathon with food poisoning. And I was as weak as a kitten. I couldn't even lift my rucksack. And I've got a 52-mile, you know, leg to run that day. And I couldn't run for the first 4 hours. I was just completely exhausted. I couldn't eat breakfast. It was just terrible. And you know, right now, you can imagine, I'm trying to pull every emotional resource that I can. And I'm visualizing the finish line, and I'm just putting one foot in front of the other, and I'm seeing what I can do. By 8 o'clock that night, it started to get dark, and there's nobody around me. There's about 700 competitors in this race, but because I'd walked for the first 4 hours, I was pretty much at the back of the back of the line, and I couldn't see anyone. And you're not running on tracks. This is all open desert on map and compass points. And as it starts to get below freezing in the desert at night, and the top temperature that day had hit 52 Celsius, about 135 Fahrenheit, and I was exhausted. I'd done. I was absolutely physically done. And it's at that point where, you know, with the dog on one shoulder that's saying you can do it is being drowned out by the dog on the other shoulder that's shouting, hey, listen, you got nothing else to prove. All right, don't kill yourself. You know, you've done well. Well done. There's a nice hot bath waiting for you if you just fire your distress flare, and they'll pick you up and take you to the hotel. And, oh, what a warm, cozy bed. How nice would that be? And, all of a sudden, you're starting to, the noise on that shoulder is getting really, really tempting. And it was at that point, just where I thought I'd given everything. In fact, my strategy in the morning when I repacked my kit was to bury my rocket flare. They give you a little rocket flare that if you fire off, the helicopter comes and takes you out of the race. And I'd always bury it right at the bottom of my rucksack, because the theory was it was always easier to take one more step than it was to stop, unpack, and fire this thing off. So it was getting to a point where I thought, I can't do it. You know, I've pulled everything out of my toolbox I can. I've given every ounce. I'd not eaten in 24 hours. And I've got another 30-odd miles to run. And it's just getting pitch black, and it's starting to get below freezing. And that was it. I virtually made the decision that I couldn't go on. And it was at that moment that a blind Korean guy in his 60s ran by me, tied to his guide.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I just looked at him in awe, plodding away. Here's this guy with no eyesight, can't see the rocks that he's stumbling over, can't see the magnificence of the dunes that we were going over. has no physical sight to the to what he's doing. The only thing he's got is a piece of string tied around his wrist to somebody that's trying to guide him. And the guy's nearly 70 years old. And I'm like, oh my God. And he so inspired me at that point that I wanted to find out what motivated this guy. But in order to do that, I had to catch him. And I took off, and he inspired me to finish the race that night, and then go on to complete the entire rest of the race. And I actually got caught up with him that night when we got back, or it was early next morning when we finished that day. And I sat down with him, and through his interpreter, I asked, why does he do what he does? And it turns out that his brother had died of cancer a couple of years before, and he was raising money for that charity, and he did it every year. And it just so inspired me, but it also taught me a very valuable lesson, and that is, no matter how low we think we are, no matter how out of gas we think we've got, no matter how bottom of the barrel we think we've fallen to, or how much we've given, there is always another level. There's always another level. And it's the willingness to dig deep and come inside ourselves at that point, to come from that place, that really is the true test of human character. And that taught me so much that night in the desert about what tricks, about what we tell ourselves versus what we are really, really capable of. And it was a great and stunning example, and I'm very grateful to have had it.
Oh, that's an amazing story. Wow. I would have been running behind him with a microphone.
Absolutely.
But a couple things come up out of that story besides the sheer inspiration of it. Is the voice. The voice that's telling you to, that's it. The really reasonable sounding voice that's taking you out. Where does this come from? Because this is the kind of thing that, normally I'm pretty focused and goal-oriented, and, things are pretty simple. And this voice, that kind of blech voice, the one that's taking me out of the game here on this issue with my weight loss consciousness experiment that we're doing, is that same, almost little underhanded, negative, kind of putting these hopeless, like making me think I really can't do it anymore. Making me think that there's really something wrong with me, and I it's over, give up, just relax for a while, just, stop struggling with all of this. And where does that voice come from?
It's almost as if, Nicole, that life will always allow those kind of thoughts to fill the vacuum if we don't have enough inspiration to go forward and grow and become more. And I think that's a valuable lesson. I think there's a real insight there. You don't have to plant weeds in your garden. Right? They'll always show up if you don't tend it. And the difference between a beautiful garden and one that's overrun by weeds has nothing to do with the ability or the quality of the soil. It has everything to do with whether you're putting time or investing time into it, and have that as your outcome. So if you don't have a big enough why, a big enough desire, want to set a big enough example, it's almost as if life will fill the gap for you with negative self-talk, just either as a warning or as leverage. Depending on what level of person you are at that time will depend on whether it is a warning or whether it is leverage. And if I was to say to you right now, if your daughter, for example, or was to be look at you as a role model for health and was passionate about that, you'd probably have more desire to change. If the doctor tomorrow turned around and said that if you don't lose X amount of weight within X amount of time, right, this is going to happen, and it was something extremely undesirable, you would have a behavior change. That is leverage. That is desire. That is you focused in one direction with more reason behind that. And everything in life serves a purpose. I don't care whether it's a cloud, a waterfall, a tree, a blade of grass, an animal. There is nothing in life that life has created that doesn't serve or contribute to something else. And it's almost as if we don't buy into that energy, it'll overrun us with weeds and choke us out of the game.
I feel metaphorically like I'm where you were on that, you know, stick a fork in me, I'm done moment just before the old blind guy went running by you, where you're just kind of just exhausted, you know, and it's coming in on that level of, give up, rest, you know, take a break. I need my blind guy to run by.
What would that be for you? And it doesn't have to be a slap round the face with a 2x4. It could be, in fact, a lot of the most lasting forms of inspiration that I've seen have been effortless. It's been an insight, an awareness, an epiphany, if you like, and all of a sudden, bang, life flows. It's like everything lines up, and now the clouds part, you see what it is that you're here to see, and you can just let that unfold. Yeah, and other times it happens, you know, you have to take yourself to a point of near death in the desert for life to be able to deliver something for you. Yeah, it's, you know, we don't get to, I guess, choose what, you know, what's off the menu that life's going to deliver. But it can come, you know, no need to be fixated that, oh, I need to go out and get motivated, because, you know, I think that defeats the whole purpose. Yeah, it's a case of, you know, what will I allow life to bring into my experience to be able to show me or energize me in a way that allows me to reconnect with who I really am and what I'm really here for. And I think that once we open ourselves to that awareness, magic can happen.
So it's a different energy than the forcing yourself to do it.
Yeah, see, this is the whole thing, persistence. Yeah, the whole struggle and effort of persistence is, you know, it's like the dieting. Yeah, it inherent in the energy of persistence. Yeah, if your listeners are so in touch with themselves emotionally that they could probably feel a little thing move inside themselves, if I say the word commitment, yeah, or persistence, or, you know, that kind of energy has a whole, almost a negative connotation to it. It's almost as if we're setting up in advance a struggle.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the natural inclination there is to resist. Guess what? Once we resist, we start to expand more of what it is that we're resisting. So, you know, for me, what I noticed when I looked at some of the super achievers in life is that they didn't seem to have all of that stuff going on. Yeah, they weren't resisting who they were, and they weren't resisting this, you know, this whole, oh, I've got to drag myself out of bed at 6 o'clock in the morning and work, you know, like a banshee and all the rest of it. Instead, it was this whole effortlessness, yeah, sort of phenomena that was going on, and the one word that I could probably sum it up in that, you know, is probably one of the most powerful words when used correctly or when taken in the context that I'm trying to explain now, and that is surrender. Yeah, when you finally surrender to what it is that you want, you're no longer engaged in this push-pull fight of, you know, smashing the obstacles to get there in order to, you know, prove your sense of self-worth. But you just simply surrender to what it is. If, you know, if this is my goal and that means I get up at 6 o'clock every morning for the next 3 months, then I'll simply do it. Why? Because I'm surrendered to what it is that I want. Yeah, there's not so much of a resistance there. Does that make sense?
Total sense, because that it totally explains my frustration and exhaustion and all of these, you know, non-like-minded things I've been feeling for quite some time on this issue. So, because that's exactly how I've been trying to do it, is just keep powering through and, you know, pushing.
But life will have a habit of tapping you on the shoulder a few months after and say, hey, how's it working for you?
Yes, it has done that, and I... Really crappy, thanks for asking.
and yeah, so if you were just to surrender into well, that's my goal, this is what I want to do, this is, you know, this is the lifestyle I'm going to choose, and this is going to be my eating choice, and this is going to be my my exercise routine, yeah, just to support me on the physical side, and I'm going to stop resisting, I'm just surrendering, almost celebrating into the fact that, yeah, this is what I'm doing. Yeah, it doesn't matter what it looks like now. Yeah, I don't care anymore about what happens when I look in the mirror, because that's not what it's about. Yeah, I'm just surrendering to where I'm going.
Yeah? So really detaching from the present day results.
Yeah, you're still living in the moment, but you're not judging yourself from where you've been, which is the manifestation of what you think you see in the moment.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and I still need my blind guy. That would really help. How did you do in the race, by the way?
Actually, very good. I'm a lot better than I thought. Bearing in mind, again, some of these people are professional, you know, athletes and some of the fittest people in the world. There was 600 and, I think, 80 or 690 participants that started the race. 600 actually finished. It was a very strong field, and I came 445th.
Oh, wow. Any idea what the blind Korean man came in at?
I don't know. I don't know. It would have been somewhere towards the back, but if you actually go to my website at petersage.com, there's a section on there called Pushing the Limit on the HTML version. And there's I wrote a diary account of what actually happened in the desert and how that can translate into learnings for our lives. So if any of the listeners want to go there, you can download that for free. It's inspired a lot of other people to be able to go and do their, you know, whatever it is, their physical goal or challenge was that they're looking for. And, you know, you will, readers will be more than welcome to go there and download that.
When was the race?
2003.
And how long did you train for?
It was Christmas 2002, so 4 months.
Wow, that's absolutely amazing.
And most of which was spent on an aeroplane.
A very, very short period of time.
Yeah. I mean, luckily I was in good shape. But, I mean, say when I say good shape, I mean, I couldn't have gone out and run a marathon the day that I decided to do the race, let alone seven. But, again, if you're consistent and, you know, my body was going to, we were going to get there, yeah, no matter what. The amount of times, as I said, one of the most powerful things was that I'd already finished the race 100 times in my mind before I set foot on the sand.
So when you came home from that, what did you do next?
I went and ate everything I could. You know, within I was vaporizing calories at 50 feet. But from a physical challenge, I've not done an enormous amount since then. I ran the London Marathon in a 40-pound rubber rhinoceros suit for charity, just because it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Okay.
And this year I'd actually signed up for the North Pole Marathon, which is in April, although I've had to pull out of that because something has actually clashed with the date, so it's going to have to be next year. But I'm very inspired by a race or a group of races called Race the Planet. In fact, I think it's racetheplanet.com. And that's the four ultimate deserts, and it's the same format as to what I did in the Sahara. 7 days, marathon a day, double marathon on day four, carry all your kit. And that's across the Sahara, the Gobi Desert, which is I think the windiest desert in the world, the Atacama Crossing in Chile, which is the highest desert in the world. And if you manage to do those three, you qualify for the fourth race, which I'm very inspired to do, and that is the what they call the last desert. And that is Antarctica.
My goodness. Are these like crazy masochistic organizers that think of the worst challenge in the world? Or
people do it for their own reasons. And that's, it's also worth checking in on because, you know, if you're doing it in order to prove that you're good enough, no amount of medals on the wall will ever do that because that isn't something that you can solve with a certificate. Yeah, that's nothing that you can solve by holding something in your hands. That's only something you can solve by figuring out inside that you're okay where you're at.
That's a good point. Well, you are a very intriguing guy, Peter Sage. You are always up to something very interesting, and I just love the fact that you're on the show and we can talk about these things. We are at the top of the hour already. It's flown by, and thank you so much for being here.
You're so more than welcome.
PeterSage.com. You can read about the adventures in the Sahara Desert, the stories that Peter was talking about today, and his work there. And we will have you back again in the future, I'm sure. Meanwhile, I guess I'm surrendering to it, looking for my blind guy running by. I will be microphone in hand, running right behind him. And we will talk to you guys. Tomorrow night we have Gifts for the Heart and Soul 2007. Yay! Most amazing lineup of guests to introduce you to tomorrow night. So be there at newsforthesoul.com. And actually, that's Wednesday night. I just realized it's Monday. I'm time traveling again. Bear with me. And Thursday night we'll be back here on the BBS Network with you. See you then, everybody.
This has been News for the Soul with Nicole Whitney. Visit us anytime online at www.newsforthesoul.com, where you can listen to all our previously aired shows at any time and so much more. Have a great week, and remember, what you focus on expands.